Ninth Fork by Rowena Cherry. Carpe scrotum sees life by the testicles. The queen consort of the Volnoth needs a sperm donor, and only one green-eyed god has the right stuff. Little does she know, she has pinned all her hopes on the crown jewels of the fabled royal Saurian Jinn. Not only is he the son of her greatest enemy, but he has taken a vow of chastity. Chapter 5. This is an excerpt, and you should know that when the Queen, Electra Geraldina, asked Rhett to be her sperm donor, he refused. However, she couldn't just give up like that, so she has followed him to a brothel where he is staying. He's on his own, and she sneaks into his bedroom after he's had a variety of other visitors, all wondering what's going on. So we start. I will actually start here. Rhett's bedchamber. If one wanted to be invisible, there was nothing like making a spectacularly vivid first impression in an arousal red coat dress that no one knew was reversible. The silvery green obverse of Electra's jet dress was made of reflection fabric and interwoven with odor-neutralizing eluters, microscopic tubes that fitted into holes between the warp and weft of the silk and were activated by humidity. Unseen and unscented, she had glided along the pleasure palace's corridors, hunting a green-eyed god. Luck of luck! Rhett's bedroom door stood wide open, but not an invitation. Rhett hadn't dared to listen to most of what the Empress Hellespita was saying to Rhett in a beyond-the-rim world language. She couldn't afford to think about the tincture of herbs in her inner pocket or about anything except staying out of the light and reflecting the designs on the wall behind her back. Rhett's walls felt like fruit pith. Painted onto the knobbly silk panels were stylized views of genitalia, possibly intended to inspire the brothel's male patrons with confidence. Holding her breath and willing herself to blend in, she sidled towards the swathes of drapery that curtained the bed. There, in the curtains, she waited for the Empress Hellespita to leave and for Rhett to be alone. In the corridor outside Rhett's bedchamber, later.
One has said exactly enough.
Hellespita paused outside Rhett's door, which she had closed as she left. Ever since Django Ra had willed her to read his vile mind while he slowly strangled her, she had seemed to know what everyone else was thinking. Django's disturbing gift probably would not last, so it wasn't worth mentioning. However, it was reassuring to have gauged Jarrett's mind to perfection and to know that he felt that his quest was his own choice. A precisely calculated cocktail of humiliation, outrage, pique, and curiosity added to Jeff's powerful sense of noblesse oblige, and it ought to be enough to send him to Earth out of Electra Geraldina's sphere for a minimum of the 12 Earth weeks that the return journey would take. Given human bureaucracy, it was quite likely that Jarrett would be away for a full year. Even if he were on a wild goose chase, it was the best excuse that one could come up with. Perhaps he would meet a nice, quiet Englishwoman in a coroner's office, or wherever one went to look up stranger certificates of births, marriages, and deaths. The Empress Hellespita turned and stared back at the closed door.
Fanciful folly! What would one see if one had the ability to look through doors and walls?
Nothing more than one had already seen.
Yet in dear Jarrett's room one had sensed a presence.
No doubt the disturbance was due to Jarrett's confused and contradictory thoughts about Electra Geraldina.
How extraordinary, though, that the boy should be so obsessed with his testicles.
Chapter 5. Electra. Artificial insemination by donor cannot be called infidelity. A sexual congress would be. Electra parted the curtains behind the bed and stared down at Rhett. Her eyes had accommodated to the near dark. He'd turned down the cover of the moonstone until only a curved sliver of blue-white light spilled from the top of the bedpost. Even in the faint light, it was impossible not to be flustered and dazzled by him. He was gorgeous. How incredible it was that he slept alone. She'd waited and waited for him to fall asleep.
Her treacherous heart had banged. She'd pressed a spare pillow that she'd found on the floor over her chest and stomach to muffle any involuntary sounds. She tensed every muscle in her abdomen. As she tried not to breathe hard enough to be heard and listened to the whisper of his bedding sliding over his hard body when he turned, every wicked thought and fantasy she'd ever toyed with had twanged in her mind. What would she do to him if he didn't wake? Should she silently worship him with her hands and with her mouth until he granted her the rich bounty of his body? That would be the most efficient method. Did oral stimulation cross the line between what was necessary to produce the donation and what constituted illicit pleasure? Did oral stimulation meet the legal definition of sexual pleasure? If she didn't enjoy doing it, was it still pleasure under the law? Wasn't it too late to worry about that? Besides, he might not recognize her. If she didn't speak, he might assume that she was an employee of the establishment. Now his breathing was slow, even. He lay on his back with his arms bent behind his head. The secret hollows beneath his shoulders were lavishly overgrown with a fine, dark, long hair. His chest was hairy, unlike that of a Volnov. The muscles were flat, defined slabs rather than bulging. His was the body of a fit, healthy, athletic young male. When clothed, he looked like a lightweight, built for speed and controlled grace rather than power. A male of his build might stagger under her weight if he tried to sweep her up into his arms and carry her to his bed. What am I thinking? She didn't want him to carry her off. She wanted to leave his room with an impervious pouch full of his hot, fresh life force, which she would keep warm and vigorous between her breasts until she delivered it to the new flash freezer aboard her royal barge. Her plans were much more sophisticated this time around. Her spies had been busy. If her brother Tarrant Aragon could freeze bullets of testosterone to seed clouds and rain down aphrodisiacs to pacify his enemies, she could freeze pessaries of semen to be discreetly inserted just before the next fertility induction ceremony. Why did she hesitate? Was it because she had never committed petty theft before? His refusal to donate, and he'd refused to sell his semen. She'd come like a thief in the night to take what he would not freely give her. But after all, it was only semen. He wouldn't miss it. He had no use for it. Millions of males tossed theirs away every day. Whether he woke or slept through it, he'd enjoy the procedure very much. It wouldn't hurt him. A vigorous ejaculation would be good for his health. And if he woke with her lips around him and her tongue stroking his length, he might forget all his objections and beg her not to stop. The silk sheet covered his lower parts as closely as paint. There was no doubt that Rhett was a great gin. She could clearly see all his contours and ridges. The colored sheet distorted her perception, but his positor had its own aura. She gazed down on his hard shape, imagining how something like that might feel inside her. Inside her mouth, of course. What gave her pause? Was it fear of being caught? Didn't it make more sense to fear what would become of her if she failed to return to her mate with viable sperm? Rhett sighed in his sleep. Now or never. Time was running out. She could not be late for the next orgy of state, and that orgy simply had to be a success. She reached forward to stroke him. As her open palm trembled over him through the thin sheet, she felt his heat. The fullness of the pad at the base of her thumb brushed the silk-covered, springy, tantalizingly potent scented hair at the base of his positor. By all the lectures! Ow! His left hand had clamped down on her forearm, just above the wrist, in a grip more powerful than any she had never ever known a normal hand to exert. Still gasping in shock and pain, Electra turned her head and quailed inwardly at the expression of intense fury on his face. At the same moment, he lifted and twisted her arm in such a way that her elbow and shoulder joints locked. She could only bend backwards. In a flash, she was lying on her back beside him, her bent arm twisted above her head. A wave of helplessness overtook her. Tingling fangs of ice bit into her scalp as if some invisible, icy-toothed predator had made a mouthful of her head. Her bowels and knees felt loose and watery. Her bones vibrated like a tiger on rock tremor before a volcanic eruption. If she needed further confirmation that Rhett was a great djinn, she had it. His use of gincraft was proof positive that he was everything she yearned for in the father of her baby. Rhett's lean-jawed face was close to hers. She stared at the grim lines of his lips. "Bad move," he rasped softly. His dark pupils scanned her. She tried to struggle, but couldn't move. "Do you play chess, Your Imperial Highness?" He'd recognized her. "In chess terminology, you are pinned," he whispered hoarsely. "Because of who you are and where you are, there are a number of moves that you cannot make because of the risk of discovery. You've more to lose than I have if anyone finds you here." His beautiful masculine lips twisted into a frightening, humorless sneer. "I doubt even Tarrant Aragon would be pleased with you." Electra exhaled hard through her nose to dispel the dizzying sickness that threatened to overwhelm her. "Why do you say that? I don't know what you mean," she protested.
"About Tarrant Aragon," he whispered. "I've no illusions about my brother-in-law. He doesn't go out of his way to call me Prince Jarrett in public in order to enhance my credibility as a chaste and trustworthy Saurian knight. It would suit him very well if some high-profile female entangled me in a sex scandal, as long as that female was not his sister, the Queen of the Volnoths."
She would have loved to contradict him, but she could think of nothing clever and devastating to say. Her brother was a pragmatist, and interstellar war was never convenient, particularly when the war was over one privileged female's sexual favors.
"I didn't come to make trouble for you, Rhett. No one knows that I'm here. I simply came to ask why you refused me," she lied. "I have to know."
Scene break. Rhett's point of view. "Why did you say no?" The glorious Electra breathed, wide-eyed and almost piteous, her slender arm trembling in his grasp. "Does she think I'll fall for this act of bewildered immorality? Not likely." Electra had forgotten to flirt and tease, and Rhett felt himself rise to her as if she were his first genuine damsel in distress. She wasn't, of course. There was no point in beating around the bush or pretending to misunderstand. The lady wanted to know why he refused to impregnate her.
"I like my life," he retorted, gritting his teeth.
"I didn't ask you to give your life," she flashed back quietly.
"You are married, naked,"
the self-righteous horse's ass in him pontificated.
"Moreover, adultery is wrong."
A second rationale weakened the first. If he'd been absolutely sincere, shouldn't he have lectured at full volume to be sure they were discovered? Was it possible that he was not quite the cold-blooded, judgmental prig they all hated him for being?
"You wouldn't be committing adultery, Rhett. Not if you did what I asked," she argued desperately.
As far as he could tell, her point, which was fallacious, was that he at least was exempt from Volnoth law because they were not in Volnoth jurisdiction and neither of them was Volnoth. Rhett wasn't so sure about that. If he and Electra were to have an affair, it would meet the imperial definition of high treason one way or another, and their lives would be forfeit.
"Alienating a mated female's affections is the wrong thing to do in any civilized world," he recited. "Where I grew up, a married man may sue his wife's paramour and receive compensatory and punitive damages for alienation of affections and criminal conversation."
"I do not expect you to alienate my affections."
Her whispered vehemence sounded a touch overdone. After all, she wouldn't be there in his bed begging to have his baby if she didn't find him attractive.
"Nevertheless, it could happen," he insisted.
After all, any stud would warn a casual conquest that she would very likely fall in love with him and get her alley cat heart broken. Did it matter that he was not the experienced, sexually sophisticated lover of her dreams? No, because she wasn't going to find out.
"You think so?"
she sneered.
"I do think so."
"How presumptuous of you. My affections are not an issue. My mate needs an heir. He cannot sire one on me, and he cannot and will not admit it."
"Are you sure about that?"
He curled his lip, insulting her. The more she thrashed about for an acceptable reason to fool around, the more she brought out the latent predator in him.
I need gin semen.
So I gathered. Do you realize the power I would have over you? Overfigured, I could prove any time I wanted to do so that your body, your baby, was my get. Rhett considered the temptation, and his head rejected it. On the other hand, she was gorgeous, hot, a goddess, and she wanted to have his baby. She knew the risks, and still she was in his bed. He was master here in this place, with his brothers and his father within earshot. He could do what he pleased, and she wouldn't dare to cry out. She was his to punish. Who knows, he might learn something. Supposing I were to agree, let's discuss delivery.
Scene break. What is there to discuss?
Rhett was being difficult on purpose. Electra understood that, and for once she didn't know what to do about it. Here they lay together on his bed, shoulder to shoulder, hip to hip, whispering like lovers. He was naked, she was fully dressed, and yet she was the one who felt vulnerable, despite her protection. His arm was raised, holding hers, and the tantalizing scent of his pheromones made her want to bury her nose in the sensitive softness of his armpit and breathe in. His bare skin smelled of heady arousal, a recent washing, and of male. The dark centers of his cold green eyes were large and unfathomable. Excitement, contempt, or anger flared his nostrils. He smiled a welcome, but showed his teeth in warning. The moonstone's light threw sinister shadows across his face. "The lovers were in my cards," he murmured, as if this were a triumphant conclusion to an inner debate.
"I do not require a lover."
"What if I do?" he murmured. Oh, by all the lectures of antiquity, he wanted to deliver his donation. Electra trembled. Out of male pride, he intended to lie with her, not merely donate. He decided to bed her. "Tell me exactly what you expect."
As he spoke, his thumb caressed the soft skin on the underside of her forearm. "I expect you to..." It was unexpectedly hard to say.
When she decided to come here, she'd mentally rehearsed different versions of the same basic conversation. She thought of speaking in impersonal, clinical terms, of demanding his body fluids in the same way that the royal gynecological faculty servants explained how Her Majesty should provide a urine sample. But he was more than a delivery system. She considered treating the entire process as an embarrassing practical joke, but jokes were ultimately shared, and what she wanted was a deadly serious matter. If she made a joke of it, he might share the joke with others, or take his participation lightly, or he might presume upon the connection and develop a delusion that they were intimately entwined.
"I expect you, Rhett, to ejaculate."
"Here's the problem. I am not the sexual equivalent of an espresso machine. I do not ejaculate to order. How will you bring me to the point where I want to ejaculate?"
"He is trying to humiliate me."
Electra did not understand his comment about what kind of a machine he was not. She did understand that he was angry about her choice of words.
"Perhaps you could touch yourself," she suggested.
"Where?"
"Down there."
"I could." His sinfully beautiful lips curved into a wicked slow smile.
"If I wanted to." "How will you make me want to touch myself down there?"
Electra swallowed. With a shock of surprise, she noticed that the private parts had begun to pulse and snatch, nothing like the pelvic floor exercises one performed.
"I might touch myself," she offered.
"Where? How?" he demanded.
"I might run my hands down my sides if you let go of my arm."
Rhett lifted one eyebrow at her. "Masturbation is not like yawning, my dear." Electra blinked at him.
"I do not understand you."
"No? You know what a yawn is." He opened his mouth wide and sighed aloud to demonstrate. "When an ordinary being without special powers sees another person yawn, the yawn is contagious. One yawn sets off a spontaneous and involuntary chain reaction of others' yawns." He stroked a line from her armpit to her hip bone with one finger. "You seem to think that if you run your hands down your sides, I will be unable to stop myself from running my own hands down my own sides. Real men and gods don't do that. Try again."
I might cut my breath. The instant she made the offer, she saw his eyes light up with malicious laughter or lust, and she knew that she'd made another bad choice.
Now why would you do that? He purred.
Wouldn't that make you feel like touching yourself? There was no going back, so she moved forward.
No, that would make me feel like touching your breasts. If you were to lift your breasts in your hand, I would look on that as an offer. I would dip my head and lick and suck on your breasts. I might lick gently and suck hard, or lick hard and suck gently. I'd take my time, a very long time. I'd play with your breasts with my mouth and with my hands until my tongue was tired, and I'd run out of ways to make your nipples change shape and color and size and texture. That's what I'd want to do. So, is that what you'd like me to do?
Absolutely not.
Again, she'd said the wrong thing. He was the most difficult god she'd ever tried to talk to.
Do you expect me to become sexually excited by watching you make a cynical gesture designed to manipulate my feelings, knowing full well that your breasts are not on offer?
His voice shook, probably with outrage.
Yes. No.
I find myself unable to deliver.
I beg your pardon. I am accustomed to males who are not animals.
From the flicker in his eye, she understood that bringing Vizigot into bed with them was not a good idea. Prince Jarrett would not be moved to ejaculate out of speciesism.
I have heard that semen donors on other worlds find the necessary urge to release by looking at pictures and using their imaginations.
I lack imagination.
Possibly we could hire one or two of the professionals in this establishment.
His raised eyebrows stopped her. That would hardly be discreet, he said dryly.
Could I pay you to look at pictures until you find yourself?
Paying me would cheapen things, wouldn't it?
He smiled unpleasantly.
How much, in terms of currency, do you think it would take to send me into transports of sexual ecstasy?
Electra saw the trap. Any sum, great or small, would be a body insult.
In chess terms, you are forked with that one, my dear, he crooned. Let's go back to the beginning. Suppose you touch me.
Where?
Why waste time? Go for the operative part, just as you were doing when I woke up and intercepted your hand.
He still held her arm. Now he shook it gently.
Imagine your fingers are wrapped around my joystick. Imagine your mouth...
Excuse me? Your what?
My joystick. My root of all evil. My shaft of all pleasures. My volcano of love. My magic mushroom that springs up in the dark. My full boost vertical. My...
Do ridiculous sayings like this excite you, Prince Jarrett? Rhett laughed softly and harshly.
Not in the least. I leave exciting me to you. This is all your idea, so seduce me at your peril if you can. I see no reason to help you and every reason not to cooperate.
Come now, you went to the island school for princesses, didn't you?
Surely you haven't forgotten what they taught you in concubinage class.
She did remember concubinage class, although it had been a long time ago, and she had left the school before her studies were complete.
You are mocking me, she tried to twist free. In all her controlled and public life, she had never felt so close to breaking down.
You are not taking this seriously.
It is a very bad idea, Your Majesty.
As she fought, Rhett was strongly tempted to kiss her inexpertly and perhaps roughly to teach her a lesson she'd never forget. He could. She was in his power. With his free hand, he could knead one of her lovely breasts until she gasped. He could play the tough, heartless super-impregnator. She knew he was Jin. She only wanted him because of it, which was bloody insulting.
Rules now. There had to be rules for a rake that he should observe were he at this fork in his life to take the broad, low road and become a young, wicked, dangerous debaucher of lovely, virtuous females. Not that Electra could by any stretch of the imagination be called virtuous, and he would not be debauching her. The boot would be on the other leg. She would be taking his virginity, but he'd be damned if he'd let her know it, no matter how much of a turn-on it would be to be taken in hand by an island school graduate who knew a lot about sex. He would definitely formulate a code of conduct, because he enjoyed making rules. Making rules like doing mental arithmetic
was an effective way of resisting the urge to do with his free hand exactly what she wanted him to do. Rule one, then. Never sleep with a lady only once, especially in the case of an older lady. There would have to be a second occasion, shortly after the first, to prove that he was not after only one thing. Also, to avoid leaving the lady with the impression that he'd found her too slow or too demanding in bed. Electra was demanding. Delightfully so. She'd taken the lead and said what she wanted. Now, what would she do? Rhett smiled down at the furious lady sharing his pillow and thrashing wildly to escape. Or was she trying to get a leg up and over him? That reminded him. Rule, rider to rule number one. Having sex multiple times the first sleepover does not count as more than one date. Rule two. There had to be a rule two. The lady comes first. Ladies first by whatever means necessary? He considered that. Did a shameless royal adulteress who was only there for the semen count as a lady? On the other hand, where would be the power play? Where would be the punishment if she got what she wanted without having to put out? If it took a lot of fumbling and prodding and a great deal of experimentation on his part, what choice would she have? She could hardly laugh or swear at him, or she would never have her wicked way. Rule three, the rest of the nevers. Never wear a thong, never kiss with a closed mouth, it's ungodly, never kiss with open eyes, unless she does. Never strike, force, or take advantage of a lady, even if she climbs into your bed of her own volition. Ah, well, it was fun while it lasted. Red opened his fingers and let her wrench free, leaving the next move up to her. She promptly fell off the bed. It was a very bad idea, Red repeated, as Electra exploded out of his room and out of his life, for both of us. He'd done the right thing, but it had been a close call. I have been reading from Night's Fork by Rowena Cherry. And, of course, when she leaves the room, she gets seen and scandal erupts. Taking the wrong lover in the wrong place at the wrong time is dangerous, and when the high and mighty intervene, it can be fatal. Can true love and a pure white knight's virtue triumph when society loves a right royal scandal? Night's Fork can, more excerpts from Night's Fork can be found to be read on my website at www.rowenacherry.com. Night's Fork can be bought in any bookstore and can be found at Amazon.com, at BarnesandNoble.com, BooksAMillion.com, and book-selling sites all over the world. Thank you.
And for those who are interested, L.S. Caldwell's Multicultural Paranormal Mystery, The Anime Mysteries, The Golden Treasure, is the first book in a series. And next Tuesday from 10 to 12 a.m. Ms. Cole will do the same thing that Rowena Cherry, futuristic romance author, did this morning, and hopefully other people who are interested will listen to these programs and decide this is a great way to promote their books with PIVTR's new program Backstage. And they have enough pictures, JPEGs, we can also put a slideshow along with your ad or your book cover or a chapter so that people can actually see what your book is all about. They say that when you see the visual, 65% of sales happens. So, once again, if you're interested in doing a program on Backstages on PIVTR, please contact Lillian Caldwell at 734-332-5902. Thank you very much. I hope you had a great morning with Rowena Cherry. Rowena, please give your URL.
Yes, certainly. It's my name, Rowenacherry, rowena@rowenacherry.com. And I would absolutely love it if you were to visit my website, if you would leave me a comment, because I've recently updated my website, and I've got both my front pages, the old homepage and the new homepage, and I would love people to vote which one they prefer. And, of course, I always love to hear from readers. So find me at www.rowenacherry.com. Thanks, Lillian.
You're welcome. And for people who want to know, you can buy Rowena's books at?
Oh, Borders, particularly Borders,
Also books, Borders.com, of course, Booksamillion.com, BarnesandNoble.com, Fish Pond in New Zealand, I think it's called Fish Pond, Waterstones in the UK, Tesco's, W.H. Smith's, Forbidden Planet, Murder One. Is that enough?
That's enough. And for people who read the book and write a review, you will be invited on to PIVTR's backstage so that you can
record their review.
Exactly.
Wow, that would be fabulous. I must tell all my friends.
And then people can call in, and the call-in number is, for people who want to call in and stick around, is 916-233-0780, pin number 924920. And if they have a question, they can call 866-456-7879, pin number 924920. But please limit your call to about 3 minutes. Ask your question, give your name, and then please disappear so that other people can also call in and ask their questions. So that is Backstage with PIVTR in a nutshell. Remember, if you read Rowena's book or you read the anime mysteries, you will be invited on a Backstage program, which airs on the second Tuesday of each month for right now from 10 to 12. And you can come in and read your review, and we can discuss it. You would like to add anything else, Rowena?
Yes, please. I would like to mention that the next Crazy Tuesday is on, what is it, January the 6th, I think.
Yes.
And I am so excited I shan't be here, but...
You're so excited you're not being here. Okay!
Catherine Azzaro, who is immensely famous and popular and award-winning, Catherine Azzaro, the science fiction author and the fantasy author, who is well known for her Scholian Empire series, will be talking here on PIVTR in my place, and it looks like she will have the great and wonderful award-winning Linnea Sinclair with her and other fabulous guests as well. And this is such a huge event for futuristic romance and science fiction romance authors. I just wanted to get the word out that you're going to get a treat on January the 6th in my absence.
So bring your Danish, bring your coffee, bring your decaf, whatever, put your legs up, throw the husband and kids and the dogs and the cats out into the cold, and enjoy yourself and tell the problems of the world to solve, because Crazy Tuesday comes but once a month, and you want to enjoy yourself. Thank you all very much for listening to PIVTR. All of these shows will be posted at http://internetvoicesradio.com. On the right-hand side of the page, you will see Rowena Cherry's name. Click on that, and that will take you directly to her website, where these will be posted as well. And if you go on to Crazy Tuesday, these will be posted as well. And if you want to download an MP3 stream to your iPod or portable player, go down to the lower right-hand side of your page with the letters VIP. Click on it, sign up as a free member, and then for $2.60, you can download the MP3 stream. PIVTR, whether providing you with the advice of experts or giving a voice to the average person who would not otherwise be heard, PIVTR emphasizes quality and enriching programs for our listeners' enjoyment. And before you go away and stray, futuristic romance author Rowena Cherry had this to say from Night's Fork, and Rhett stated, masturbation is not like yawning. Finally, I got to put that somewhere where it belonged. Thank you all very much for listening to this morning's Backstage with Rowena Cherry, futuristic romance author. Rowena also is the proud sponsor of the new phone line with PIVTR. She is sponsoring the call-in phone number for listeners as well as the toll-free number. So if you are enjoying this new phone system, please send Rowena Cherry a thank you note because of her generosity. And Pat Meehan, who runs Career Talk with Pat, you would have not this new phone system. So thank you all very much for listening. Programming, as you know, runs until 11. Our next scheduled program literally doesn't begin until 3:30, when Lillian Caldwell interviews another author from PR by the Book, followed by Kay Al McLaughlin in Today's Woman. And then wrapping up the evening is interviews with The Long Story Short, sponsored by Denise Cassino, who owns and operates The Long Story Short Writing on Long Online School. So thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed Backstage. And if you have any comments, to make, I haven't had my morning coffee yet, so the tongue is rather slow. Please address them to rowenabow@aol.com or lillian.caldwell, C-A-U-L-D-W-E-L-L, @gmail.com. And one other thing, free promo slots are still available on Christmas Day and New Year's Day, 15 minutes live programming, request recording, $25, and contact L. Caldwell at lillian.caldwell@gmail.com or call her at 734-332-5902. And if you would like to hear a certain type of program, or if you know somebody who would be interested in becoming a talk show host, have them contact our new program director, Pat Meehan, at Meehan, M-E-E-H-A-N, at Evansville, E-V-A-N-S-V-I-L-L-E.net. Thank you all very much for listening, and have a great day. Bye.